Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Great music, great shows, great radio.
That's so Joy.
Radiothon 2014 is here. Have you sorted out your Joy membership?
Join your favourite shows as we celebrate a week of amazing radio and raise much needed funds to keep Joy out, proud and loud.
We may be on air, but we don't run on air.
Your Joy membership supports the community with great radio, uplifting music and benefits you personally with invites to member only events and prizes all year round.
Sign up or renew today and you'll have the chance to win one of our major prizes, a total prize pool of $36,000 up for grabs.
That's so Joy.
Keep Australia's first and only LGBTI radio station on air. Call 1-300-JOY-949 or visit joy.org.au.
Thanks to our Radiothon prize supporters, Mercedes-Benz Berwick.
Visit Craig Howard and his award-winning team at Mercedes-Benz Berwick. Only 23 minutes from the Burnley Tunnel. mbberwick.com.au.
Olivia Cruises.
Providing great cruise, resort and adventure vacations for lesbians. Visit olivia.com.
Oaks Hotels and Resorts.
Visit OaksHotelsResorts.com.
Craig's Royal Hotel.
Experience the legend. Visit CraigsRoyal.com.au.
Velo Electric and Folding.
Melbourne's premier folding and electric bike shop. VeloElectric.com.au.
1-300-569-949 or joy.org.au. That's so Joy. Radiothon 2014.
That's so Joy!
Today on Escape Pod and Joy 94.9, we have guest stars from...
stars?
I know, it's like a who's that radio. We have Michael and Mark from Technogaze. Today, one of the big things we're talking about with regards to travel is... one, visas and travelling and how technology is changing the way that we can live and work in other countries.
Yep.
And other technology stuff and being an expat. So all three of us at one stage have either been expats or been in the process of becoming an expat. So it's travel to live and technology as well. So that's what we're talking about on the Escape Pod today. If you've got any questions or want to put in your two Bob worth or two Franks worth if you've been living overseas as an expat, SMS us on 0427-JOY949 or email us on at joy.org.au. We'd love to hear from you. And if you're wondering where Jo Bell is, she is currently lolling about on a hammock with a pina colada in her hand. So she's waving her freshly manicured nails at us and saying, have a good show.
I always imagine her with a pina colada close to the, in close proximity.
No, well, she's actually going to kill me when she hears that it's a pina colada instead of something that was a much more sophisticated drink. At this time of the day, it's probably a Campari that Jo would have. She has a very developed palate and... she's going to knock
me. Perhaps a martini glass or something, some description.
Exactly. No. Nothing, you won't have props in it, and I think that she's going to chide me quite severely.
No one standing over her with a bunch of grapes.
There may be.
Hovering over her mouth.
There may be. If Jo does have a shirtless grape tosser, she could tweet a photo, and I think we'll all be thrilled to bits with that. So today's Escape Pod. Mark, you just recently were having a bit of research that you were under.
I have been researching a move to New York, in fact.
So start spreading the news.
Yes.
You see what I did there?
Yeah.
Did you practice that?
Surprisingly, no.
No, it came to mind very quickly. No, I've been looking at the opportunities that New York provide, and in particular, I work in IT, as would be evident by the show that we Michael and I are on. But that you know, is a great place to be in terms of being an IT professional.
What kind of IT happens there? Because the Silicon Valley, the Silicon Prairie, blah, 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 there are a lot of Silicon areas in the United States. What is New York specialising in?
I wouldn't say like in the you know, Silicon Valley side where it's a lot of startups and a lot of new product development and that sort of thing. I think a lot of the IT that works in New York actually is, you know, business support. So I would be looking at consultancy roles.
Right.
And, you know, it'd be the kind of role that you'd go out to clients and work with them on solving problems for them, as opposed to developing new products and selling them to the masses, which might be over the other side of the country there in the US. So, I mean, because, it's, you know, New York is such a business-centric, like it's Manhattan.
Oh, and services, like, and corporate offices and...
a massive thing there. So, yeah, it's very
I've
interesting.
Seen the Wolf of Wall Street. I know what goes on.
The finance sector, perhaps. So, and some of the work that I was looking in particularly was around consulting for law firms, right?
Right.
Because, again, the legal sector there in New York is massive. Mm. You know, being IT, it's like you can either work for law firms or you can work for accounting or you can work for any insurance all across the board, but you're still doing your IT thing. So it's a very sort of
It's a very transportable skill, which is really good for us.
Mm. Yeah, for expatriate.
Yeah, yep. That's right. Mm. And I've found that Australians, in terms of the way they approach work and the work ethic, is really valued overseas.
Yes.
That we tend to be a fairly independent and self-starters and can work quite well.
I've found that. Definitely, like, talking to people over there, they just, as soon as they hear the Australian accent, they kind of think, there's almost like you've got your foot in the door already,
That's right. There's a distinct advantage
kind of handy.
Yeah.
My experiences overseas, and I've spent 10 years overseas, reflect that, is people with good educations, people with a great work ethic, people who want to get in, get the job done, get out, no fuss, and a low level of drama which is fantastic, particularly when you're working in contentious environments, which a lot of workplaces are.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So what was your experience? I mean, research was a part of it, but you also...
So I've talked to a bunch of people that are already doing the stuff, even previous presenters here on Joy have moved overseas to find their way. And, it was a big learning experience for me just to even look into it in the first place, right? Because it is, like, when you just say, oh, I'm going to move to, overseas and do work, I mean, you yourself, Mark, are quite experienced with it.
But 3 times.
But doing it for the first time is just an amazing, phenomenal sort of bar to get over, right? Like, there's so many things you have to think about, packing up your life, where you start or where you are now, and maybe, that might involve getting rid of a whole lot of stuff that you wouldn't want to take with you, but then, making decisions around what you take.
And what you store.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah.
And it's hard to know where to start looking. And especially if you're, going overseas, what resources do I have to look at to learn a little bit about the environment that I'm going to be moving into?
You, Michael, were living in Belgium. You moved to Antwerp. What year was that?
That was back in 2006.
So the internet was certainly a great resource.
Yeah, the internet helped a lot. But it's when you go into a different country that doesn't speak English, it's much harder when you're looking at websites because, you go through Google Translate, but you still miss a lot of things.
Mm. Although Belgium does have the benefit of being where the EU Parliament sits.
Right.
Well, this is Brussels, but that means...
I don't know if that's a benefit.
Well, that means a lot of overseas people are living in Belgium, so there must be a reasonable expat...
Oh, there's certainly a very strong expat community in Belgium.
Yeah.
And the expat community tends to be a lot from neighbouring countries.
Yeah.
So it's surprising how many, expats from, from the Netherlands are there, and UK, obviously, and France and stuff like that.
And
so
Germany.
In Germany, yes.
Well, people drive in and keep their cars.
Literally.
So that's a different story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, the internet does help a lot, but even then it helps to talk to a local and to get some ideas and get some tips and things like that, because how do you work out which part of town do you want to live in?
Mm.
Is this a good part? Is this not a good part?
Definitely, yeah. if you know any other expats who have already made the journey as well, they can associate it back to, like, for me to have someone to say, hey, if you like the St Kilda area of Melbourne, you might like the Brooklyn area of New York, it's a kind of that.
Something
the
equivalent. Analogous, yeah.
Sort of something with the same vibe, the same type of people in there,
But depends on where you're going, obviously, to whether how readily the expats are found, I guess.
New York City was your proposed destination, what you were researching, and this is an international city which has absorbed millions of people over its life, over its 400 or 500 years of existence, and has successfully integrated communities and also is a huge, huge magnet for expats working from all around the world in many different fields, whether it be entertainment or law, as you said, or one of the big four consultancy firms. So there must have been a great level of resources how to do New York. Did you find that, or were you finding it is not the kind of information that you were personally looking for?
I think there's a lot of online sites and so forth to just help you out with those things, and because it is such a massive population to start with, there's need for those sites to exist, right? Like just to find a place to live, there's I think, New York Magazine's livability calculator, where you just, like, it's literally got, like, a really easy-to-use sort of slider graph-type thing where you just move the sliders around on things like affordability, proximity to transit.
Oh, yeah.
Shopping, crime, those kinds of things.
And it comes up with suggested areas.
Yeah, rate the different boroughs of New York in those terms. And that's, like, it's those kinds of things that, because it's such a popular place, and there's just a need for it, right? So sites will exist to facilitate
that. Did you find any specific expat sites?
There are definitely groups around, like it's in, you know, on LinkedIn or Facebook, and I'm sure they exist for other areas as well. Again, it's a population thing, right? If there's a lot of people there, then it's a viable group to exist as. You know, they're the main forms of communication these days, is to use Facebook and LinkedIn instead of actually having, like, forum sites anymore. Right. So it's a bit sort of...
Because, I came across an expat site in Belgium, which was handy. It was simple things like, you know, the first time, how do you find a doctor? I mean, what's the process of going to the doctor in this country that, you know, you've never gone through this process
and
before?
And it's those kinds of things that you really want to prepare for, you know? Like, when you transition over there, and I'm not speaking from experience myself, but I've spoken to so many people who have, it's that whole... transition to another culture. It's culture shock, in fact, to think about, you know, how you might react to, you know, in 6 months' time, do you need to see a doctor? How do you go about finding the right doctor?
That's a really interesting point. You were showing me something the other week at Joy. There was a culture shock study that you were researching. Tell us about that.
So it's a form of psychological study where, you know, in fact, there's this up and down graph of when you... highs and lows of when you're overseas. So you might start off at a very high, as in you might be so amazed by the experience that you're having and so forth that you're like, this is the best thing that I've ever done. And then slowly it actually tapers off. And it's a proven sort of, you know, they've done studies to this effect, actually seeing that it's quite common for human beings to just go through this no matter where, no matter what where they've come from or where they're going to.
Right.
And it's the same sort of, you know, understanding what the culture is all about and sort of coming to terms with. And you sort of go through things like, oh, well, it's a bit stupid that they do this in this way as, you know, as a culture. You know, and that's just a known sort of psychological thought process that everyone goes through because you're just so used to things.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
You were talking about the five stages of
culture shock. Yeah. So, I mean, and this is a psychological sort of study that's been done around the world, but it talks about the five stages, and it goes through those stages being the honeymoon stage, the distress stage, the reintegration stage, the autonomy stage, and then the independence stage.
Give us an overview of what that means.
Well, so the honeymoon is euphoric. It's the start of a massive adventure and you know, you feel excited and stimulated and enriched about what you're actually doing.
So every difference is, this thing is amazing. Why don't we do it?
How long does that last?
Well, we're talking in terms of, you know, a space of maybe, you know, 6 months between each stage.
Right, okay.
So,
yep.
You know, it's sort of a long-term thing. Yeah. Maybe 2 years before you actually get to the end and you're kind of settled again.
Mm.
And it's all about sort of, I guess, your mental health, I guess, in a way, because it you know, does refer to maybe the distress stage, for example, where you start to feel a bit confused or you can be isolated or in fact, you can have feelings of inadequacy as well.
Right.
Just because of the, you know, the relocation, the move away from where
you're like a fish out of water. You're plonked into a strange environment and you're not that familiar with it.
And then it talks about the reintegration stage. So you might now have come to terms with disliking the culture or the language or the food that you're, you know, of the place that you're at. You might reject it as being inferior, and you know, start having prejudices towards the new culture.
Right.
But that's okay because it's actually quite a normal and healthy reaction to you know, being in the situation that you're in. So, you know, this is all sort of a very clear understanding. It's studied across multiple cultures, across multiple people. You know, it's actually quite a normal.
It would be really handy to know this up front, because then you, when you're starting to feel these things, well, hang on a minute, this is part of the normal experience that most people go through, and don't have to be worried about it. You don't have to be worried that you, perhaps you've made the wrong choice.
Mm. I mean, it's quite a leap to actually understand it and then to be going through it, but yep. to sort of make that connection that actually, no, everything is okay. But just having that knowledge that, you know, it is a studied phenomenon. Can help things a lot. I mean, you know, it's plenty of information on the web about it. If you just Google five stages of culture shock.
Yeah, and have you been an expat, dear listener? If you have, let us know, because a lot of Australians have. We're one of the, we call boomerang expats, not necessarily because it's a cultural reference, because Australians are known for travelling overseas in great numbers.
And I think Kiwis as well.
And returning.
Yeah, I'd expect New Zealanders to be somewhat similar.
To a degree, but New Zealanders also migrate quite commonly to Australia and the UK and a few other places, increasingly the United States, but staying there.
Right.
And whereas Australians are known for going places and tending to return. New Zealanders, of course, do return because they've got a great love for it, but they also tend to stay. British expats tend to leave and not necessarily go home as well.
Mm. It's an interesting thing, though, particularly on Australians. One of the interviews that I had in this regard, someone said, how are you doing your walkabout, you know, the Australian, of course, a reference to the Aboriginal sort of culture thing of leaving your home and going around and doing your walkabout. It's not quite what perhaps Australian, like, references back to Aboriginal culture, perhaps that's not what we do, but we do have a tendency to want to remove ourselves from maybe the employment situation that we're at, and just to show that we are not attached to our employers. So that's a sort of a cultural phenomenon that Australians go through that perhaps...
Yeah, they're different. I think we'll talk about your experiences in Belgium and how people relate to their employers as a more long-term perspective. I know that when I went to school in Germany, a lot of German employers think in terms of cradle to grave.
Yep.
You start with an organisation and you work through and you really learn your craft more so than how to execute a job. And it's quite common for people, even young people, to stay with firms with a very, very long-term view. And I believe that when you were on Escape Pod quite a while ago, Michael, you were saying that there was a similarity, that a lot of people really institutionalised.
Yeah, within Northern an organisation. Yeah, that's right. And your employment contracts support that. So in Germany, when you give notice, your notice is usually between 3 and 6 months, because you've got to give notice, depending on where in the quarter you give notice. Mm. So it can be as little as 3 months, it can be as long as 6 months. Which is really weird, because you hire somebody and say, oh, yeah, we'll be there in 5 months' time because, you know, we've just missed the quarter or something like that. Okay, fine, if this is what you do.
Mm. It's a very different structure and thinking.
Regimented, in fact, would be a way.
And at one stage I was looking to become have a permanent contract in Belgium. And because of my tenure of service and everything, my notice period was going to be 15 months.
Wow.
It's like, oh, good. So I decide I'm not happy with this firm. I'm going to give notice. I'll be here for 15 months. Not really happy and engaged employee, but you're going to make me stay here. It really goes against what we consider to be the norm in Australia.
Yeah, because here, when people give their obligatory 4 weeks or 30 days notice, whatever it is, and rarely do you get longer than that, quite often it's, okay, well, you're on gardening leave now, and we're going to pick up the pieces around.
Well, that's right.
And it's not a good cultural fit, but it gives a lot of flexibility and freedom to employees, which is what it was crafted to do.
Look, the flip side is, by giving 15 months notice, it means that if for some reason they're not happy with me, I get 15 months notice as well. So it works both ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whereas in Australia, it's, you know, a month and think
so you don't
goodbye.
Let the door hit your ass on the way out.
Yeah, that's the one.
That was the Liberal Party point of view, I'm assuming. So Mark, you were looking at New York, and huge opportunity, hugely exciting. And it was only last year that you were in the United States when you rode off a car and had other fun.
Don't remind him of that.
Thanks for the reference. I've tried to suppress that memory, but yeah, great.
You were just helping the local automotive economy.
That's right. It was a pretty crap car, so it may as well have been put out to pasture, and I may as well be the person to do it.
Very generous.
But yeah, no, I did. And that did give me an insight into, you know, what it would be like to be to live in New York as well, right? Because I did visit New York. It was only 5 days. It didn't really give me a chance to see a lot of the culture, but you see a lot of the culture of places like New York and Chicago and that sort of thing on TV anyway. It's just, you know, actually making it real as being there.
Yeah.
But that helped, you know, to actually know that I've been there and actually sort of been in amongst it. Mm. And you can kind of get a vibe for the city, even just, you know, how safe you feel when you're walking down the street and those kinds of things is a good thing to have when you start actually thinking about, you know, working and living full time in a city. I think it's, you know, the more you can travel, because like this opportunity just sort of came up randomly. I wasn't prepared for it. I didn't go looking for it.
Right. So you can't, this isn't something you looked for. You're quite blindsided by it. It was an opportunity that presented itself and you decided to embrace the concept.
Yeah. So having been to New York, it was actually a way to sort of say, okay, that I would feel comfortable sort of pursuing this. And, you know, it just gave me that extra level of sort of comfort. Whereas if it was like in Austin, Texas, I'm sure it's a great city, but I've never been there. So, I wouldn't...
That's really good.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a great reason to go more, you know, go traveling more, just to see the world. And if then ex-colleagues just happen to recommend you or something, then hey, you know, you're more prepared for that sort of thing.
The one of the things from a technology point of view that I think helps is something like Google Street View, because then you get the opportunity to explore from, you know, your house to see, oh yeah, this neighborhood looks like this, and to get some idea, and because the picture really, really helps, you know, cement things in your mind.
Because I believe that you can never really know until you've got the dirt under your nails, which is the expression I use, until you've actually been there, until you've actually done your shopping, until you've actually realised that you decided to get the cheaper apartment because it's on the fourth floor, but it doesn't have an elevator, and which is all fine, but you have to take water upstairs.
Yes. And you forget something at the store and you've got to run downstairs again and go back up. Yeah.
And they shut at 4:30 on a Tuesday because it's St. Gloobadooba's Day and all these bizarre little things that you don't anticipate when you go.
Or they don't have Sunday trading.
Is it a Belgian thing? Actually, it's a German thing too. Well, it's a social justice issue.
Yes, that's right. It is changing slowly.
Yeah, they don't want it. There's a big repudiation of the concept that people shouldn't have to work, and there should be one day of the week where nobody's, unless they work in emergency services or by choice, should be obligated to work.
Yeah,
and it shouldn't be an economic motive for people to work. And they don't like the idea of paying people a premium to work on a Sunday because that increases the economic motive for them being deprived
to do
of family.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. So a very social reason to reduce the availability of shopping.
But it's very hard when you come from a culture where it's available 24 hours a day.
Well, we're not. You look at something like the Middle East where it literally is available 24 hours a day, where normal shopping centre hours are 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. or midnight.
Mm.
Yeah. And and then when you come to Australia and go, why is everything shutting at six? It's like, what's going on? And then you realise you don't actually need to be in a shopping centre or shopping. There are other things to do. And there are social reasons why this happens. It's not just economic. Mm. And then you look at the other side, Northern Europe, where they just repudiate the idea altogether and say, why do we need to go shopping on a family day? Why don't we spend time with our families?
Mm. And, you know, we as a community have survived for many years without doing that. And it's only in recent years in Australia that, you know, we've had 24-hour supermarkets and things like that.
Yeah, but they're also reducing. We don't have many. I think in Burwood there's one, but there's not a lot of 24-hour.
There was an explosion at some point, particularly with supermarkets, right?
Yeah, and then but nobody suddenly, used them.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, the economic realities kicked in, right? So
that's right. Mm. But, you know, something like New York doesn't sleep. We, when I was in Belgium, we went for a visit to New York, and I remember Saturday night at midnight went out to buy bagels because, you know what, we could. They were open. And that was something that we, you know, we missed, the ability just to be spontaneous and go somewhere in the middle of the night and get something like that.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. And New York does have good bagels.
Well, yeah.
Yes, I tried them, actually, while I was there. Delicious. Yes.
So what was your favourite part about New York's food, and what were you looking forward to being an expat?
Oh, look, there is a lot of... I didn't actually explore much of the food, to be honest. I saw a bit... I went to a couple of recommended bagel shops. Yes. Of yourself, Michael.
Oh, you went to H&H.
It took me forever to find the place, but hey...
For some reason, I know about good bagel shops in New York and in London. Food's not important to me at all.
But, I mean, it's a funny thing. I think that New York is an interesting place food-wise. It's got the American vibe to it, but there is actually sort of a more diverse, you know, culturally aware vibe to food as well, right? Mm. So you get, like, there was the typical New York pizza place just down the road, and you could just go there and eat lots
Gorge.
Of that.
Yeah.
It's Radiothon Week.
That's so Joy.
It's our annual membership drive, and we're calling on you to keep Joy out loud and proud.
Did you know it costs around $4,000 a day to keep this thing going?
Sign up or renew your Joy membership right now. Get great radio, uplifting music, and ensure a GLBTI voice on your radio, smartphone, streaming online, and on social.
It also means Joy can be where your community is, with live broadcasts from Mardi Gras, Chill Out, Pride March, and this year, the first ever five-day-long live broadcast from AIDS 2014, coming to Melbourne this July.
Call 1300-JOY-949 now. That's 1300-569-949 or visit joy.org.au. Thanks to our Radiothon prize supporters, Lord Coconut,
Melbourne's only retailer, gallery and online boutique selling handcrafted contemporary jewellery designed exclusively for men,
Henry Bucks,
Australia's premier menswear emporium with contemporary curated collections never before seen in Australia,
Focus Agenda,
visit focusmelbourne.com.au,
Oscar Hunt,
Melbourne's finest made-to-measure tailors creating quality men's suits, shirts and overcoats.
Styled by Sally,
men's style consultant, Melbourne.
Grange Bellinzona.
Book your relaxing spa break with us. For more details, visit grangecc.com.au or call us on 5348 2271.
Call 1300 569 949 or joy.org.au.
Your voice, your community, your radio. Thank you for your support.
That's so Joy. Radiothon 2014.
Joy! We've had a couple of messages in from our many, many, many listeners. Mm. And thank you very much, Chris. I hope you get on your train. I'm going to ignore the rest. But Chris was a fellow Taste of Radio attendee when I went.
Right.
And has been on the show a couple of times. He's a personal trainer. And he has. Last year he came on about this time to talk about getting fit and ready for ski season.
Of course.
So, yeah, yeah. Thanks, Chris, for listening in. And we should actually have you back on to talk about the things you were doing. Basically, he was saying do a lot of squats and the side effect is you'll have great ass.
Which is great for skiing, right?
Which is great for the rest of the year. Yeah. So have a good day, Chris. And we've got some really interesting comments about what you were talking about.
Yeah, particularly the five stages of culture shock. You know, is there a name there?
Yeah, there's a name if we scroll up a little bit.
Okay. Brad. Who's a fabulous
member.
Marvellous
Melbourne.
Thank you, Brad, for being a member as well of Joy 94.9. But he was describing how, depending on the differences in culture, as in, so from our culture to, say, Japan is quite a different, you know, big gap.
Huge, yeah.
Compared to, say, here and the UK, actually changes the speed in which the culture shock sort of stages occur.
And you can imagine that happening because it's suddenly you're up against all these things that you're totally unfamiliar and you say, well, this is ridiculous. Why are we doing this?
And your mind deals with them in different ways, I guess. If you've got a lot to deal with, then perhaps it deals with them in a much more efficient way. Who knows?
And my heart does go out to Brad because I understand all about J-Rage.
What's J-Rage?
Japan Rage. It's
is
something
it discotheque?
No, it's something that expats go through and you never really leaves you. And or people that deal with Japanese companies like me, where you just sort of, you feel like you're bashing your head up against the wall. Right. Because of some of the practices. So, I've got a good example. A friend of mine...
So, these are Japanese business cultural practices, which are very entrenched in organisations.
Yeah, and just general practices. So,
smileys on...
No, it gets worse.
Sign their name?
Friend of mine who's living in Japan at the moment. He went with another friend to have his hair cut. So, both of them had an appointment back to back. He had his hair cut. The other guy comes, sits in the chair. He was told to leave the shop. Why? The sign up there says, when you're finished, you're not allowed to stay, you have to leave. It was bucketing rain down outside. Oh. He had to leave the store.
And he had a brand new hairdo.
What is the purpose of that? You know, it's just weird.
I have no idea. I didn't know that was happening. But okay, so these idiosyncrasies that make a lot of sense to, 170 million Japanese people? How many Japanese people are there? There's a lot. It makes sense to Japanese people, but from an outsider's point of view, it's like, what else are you talking about? Why would you?
And I think also Australians are very, I can't think of the right word. We like to push back on things. Mm. We like to question things.
Recalcitrant.
And larrikins and that type of thing. Whereas a lot of cultures aren't like that. So from our perspective, it's like, you're just a bunch of lemmings. You're just following, you know, this next person and the next person.
But you know what? That gives us actually a really good perspective because if we're questioning things and asking why and all that, we can actually understand it better. As a result, you know, we can actually understand the culture better and actually get more into the culture as a result, or just become outraged off your nut.
I think you're away from the grasping at straws there. got this feeling.
I would see it as a positive, right?
Well, there's another interesting comment coming in on SMS. We don't have a name here, but the phone number ends in 937. And it was noted that in Belgium, the shops were closed on Sundays, but everyone was open on Christmas Day.
Now, I don't remember Christmas Day that much, but I do know, for instance, Good Friday in Belgium is not a public holiday. Now, Belgium is a Catholic country. Easter Monday is the holiday, but not Good Friday. And
how odd.
Yeah. Not that I'm expert in Christianity, but I thought Good Friday was more holy than Easter, than Easter Monday.
Yeah.
So it's these little strange idiosyncrasies, and you question why.
Huh. Crazy.
Yes. And
we've just got another message in from Chris the PT that us boys are captivating. Thanks. Yes. We like being captivated. Thanks, Chris. And if Chris, I believe, was also living overseas, so he might SMS us with another idea about what his experiences were. But if you want to tell us yours, and we've had a bunch of people who have had expat experiences or and they want to share them, let us know, 0427-JOY949 or email onair@joy.org.au. We also know that in the United States, there's a visa that is really handy, and why New York is currently full of Australians breezing through. Mm. Tell us about your experience researching those visas, because they're not open to everybody.
No, well, I mean,
it's the spoils of war, apparently.
Right.
Yes.
So,
quid pro quo.
To be able to work in particular in the US, you've basically got two options, and this is all secondhand knowledge, so I don't have this based on legal advice, and I wouldn't take this, you know. I would always check up on it first before you start listening to me. But the understanding is there's two types. There's an H-1B and there's an E-3.
Okay, so they've named them after pencils.
As is typical with a bureaucratic, you know, thing, it's just, you know, numbers and letters. But the H-1B is really hard to get. It's requires a lot more from your potential employer.
As
in, they have to sponsor you, and there's a lot of expense involved.
It's like $3,000 or something.
Yeah. So it's
which is a tough sell when you're going into an economy that has been struggling for a number of years, and there's a lot of unemployment. So you've got to be pretty gosh darn special for someone to spend $3,000 on you and justify to the government there are no other of the 320 million Americans who can do this one particular job.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. I mean, the whole premises of getting these working visas is that no one else is available to do the job. So do you really think that an Australian is... But anyway, that's
it depends if the job description includes having an authentic Australian accent.
Right, yeah, okay.
That dingo ate my baby. Thanks, Meryl Streep.
But the benefit of the H-1B visa is that you actually, when you're there, to then continue on to get your green card, those years count obtaining a green card. So one of the requirements of getting a green card is to have already lived in the US, so those years count. The other option, the E3, you don't have that counted towards your green card at all. It's just as if you're an Australian and you're just there temporarily. And it's very much set up to be a temporary thing.
But it can lead on to other...
You can continue on to other visas, sure, but...
Not on that particular visa. Then you transition into the next one, correct, which gives you the countdown to your green card.
But each visa has to be sponsored by your employer, doesn't it?
Yes.
But it's $250.
Right, okay.
So the E3 is the most common one. You have to renew it every 2 years. After you leave a job over there, you only have 10 days to find another job, which is, you know, it could be a bit daunting if you just need to resign for whatever reason. There's university education requirements, a degree, or at least four years of study, or the equivalent working experience, which is calculated at 3 years of work for every 1 year of uni study. So
sounds all very, very intriguing.
Indeed.
You can find more Joycast and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
And we've got another message from many, many people in our diverse crowd. No, it's Chris, who seems to be listening with both ears today. He loved New Zealand, especially the snowboarding, and how the locals like to get drunk and sing their lungs out. Beautiful people. Yeah, Kiwis, we love our Kiwis. Yeah.
All of them that come to Melbourne.
Yeah.
So many of them.
Well, 1 in 10 live in Australia, so we should have some experience with our trans-Tasman cousins.
Hmm.
Yes. So the The visa situation is fantastic at the moment for people, especially if you have either a great experience in the workplace or a
university degree
or greater to go over to the United States. And currently there was articles in the paper about how many Australians are currently living in New York City particularly, and how there is an evolution of the flat white. So
it's bringing culture back to New York.
Right. No, every country in the world has a Chinatown. No, actually, China has a lot of Chinatowns. We have a Chinatown. Many countries in the world have a Chinatown. This is one of those gifts the Chinese people in their diaspora have been able to provide, is a fantastic cultural experience in so many different places, which brings a little bit of China into our own cities.
We need a Melbourne town, right?
Melbourne town in New York.
That's right.
And Little coffee. Collins. Well, there's a coffee shop called Little Collins, apparently, in Manhattan. And other places selling flat white coffees. And there are so many Australians, the demand's gone up like it has in London. So being an expat, I mean, this is a very small contribution compared to what the Chinese have been able to give everybody else around the world. But the fact that the flat white is becoming popular, I've noticed it in London, I've noticed in Dubai, it was becoming a big thing when I left there 2 years ago, that every coffee shop all of a sudden out of nowhere was selling flat whites. And it is now becoming a real New York thing.
Right.
So this is one of the things about being an expat. It's not only being able to get so much from the culture of the host culture that you go to, it's being able to give a little.
Yes.
Yeah. So what were your biggest gift to Belgium? And I said gifts.
Gifts.
So the pools. Gifts.
Oh, my presents. No.
So your presence was your present.
Yes, that's right. I don't know if I've left any gifts that sort of, you know, have stayed behind. Yes, no.
No, nothing?
No.
You had nothing of value to contribute to Belgium.
No offspring, perhaps?
No offspring. No. Yes, no. Maybe my impatience.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Belgians aren't known for their impatience, and you were able to depart.
I was able to, yes.
And impart.
Yes, spread my impatience a lot.
Okay.
Yes, Yes, they operate at a different pace sometimes.
Okay, there's a joke about, especially Dutch drivers, the only thing that the Dutch driver overtake is Belgian driver. That's from a German point of view. They just assume that if they get too fast, they'll end up in some water somewhere, so that's why they don't drive fast.
That reminds me when
Germans and their jokes.
Holiday times, we'd be driving on the road somewhere, and we'd have this guess going that we saw a caravan, it was a Dutch caravan. 95% of the time, you were right. Yeah. No matter where you were, Spain, France, Italy, it's a Dutch caravan, because the Dutch love to travel with their caravans.
Yeah, I wonder why.
No.
Any Dutchy listeners, and let us know. Why?
Not anymore. I think they've turned off.
In protest. They're pretty thick-skinned. No, actually, they'd probably be celebrating their triumphant win over Spain in the World Cup.
Yes, it was a very, very strong 5-1, I think, or something.
Well, it's not the whole World Cup. It's the road to the World Cup. Yeah. But 5-1.
It's a good way to start.
Yeah, over, I think, Spain were the last world champions of...
I must say, I do like a Dutch accent.
Really? And what is it about the Dutch accent?
I don't know. It's just very... For me, I find it warm and comforting. And a lot of people don't like it because it's too guttural. But I quite like it.
Ja, precies.
Yeah. And I quite like when a Nederlander is speaking English, because they come through with some of the Dutch pronunciations. It's quite nice.
Yeah, okay.
In fact, weekend before last, I met a girl who's from the Netherlands and she was talking English. And it was like very, very nice. Mm. Yeah, very nice accent.
It's not a pretty language, but it's a lovely language, which is unusual.
I don't.
The diminutives and speaking Dutch is nice.
Yes, yeah.
It's a nice way to communicate. Yeah, it doesn't sound great.
Oh, I see. It doesn't worry me in the slightest. I like it.
I don't find it a pretty language, but I do enjoy speaking it. So what next? The New York isn't going to happen now, or is it going to happen later, or are you looking at visa options still? Are you going on websites and going, I'm going to pretend to move in next to Hugh Jackman?
I would probably want to explore a bit more before I continue, because as I said, it was like an opportunity that sort of came up and I pursued it because it was there in front of me. I'd probably want to, if I was going to go out and do it myself, actually do a bit more. Like, I'm the kind of person that I need to know what I'm getting myself into, either that or, you know, it needs to be given to me.
but once you get this little taste of it, don't you just sort of want more?
There is an element, you know, just thinking about my life here in Melbourne, and, you know, what it would mean to actually go overseas is an amazing thing, you know, to just change everything. Like, I mean, I'm coming at it from a very much a Melbourne boy, right? I've been here all my life. I've travelled a bit, but I haven't wanted to leave for extended periods of time.
Is it something that you really want to do? Because I would pack up now and move to another country. That's me. And I've done that since I was 17.
I would definitely.
Is it something that you would are really motivated by? Or is it like, oh, God, it seems like a lot of work.
It does seem like a lot of work, but also the benefits. I'm the kind of person who I don't know what it's going to be like until I do it, you know. Mm. So, hey, why not? It's, you know, if there's nothing tying me down here, then
it would be interesting to know if there's a certain personality type that's more attracted to being an expat and, you know, picking up and going somewhere else, because you have to be prepared to be virtually alone.
Mm.
And you're by yourself, whereas, you know, a lot of people might like the connections of family and friends around them and things like that, and the thought of moving somewhere where you have no network of family or friends and having to start again from scratch is very, very difficult.
Start off with a plan, though. That's what I've heard from everyone who I've spoken to about it, is start off with a plan. Even research, and the internet's a great thing, research groups that you might be interested in when you go there. Find, you know, like if you're into community radio, for example, there's you know, radio stations based in New York.
Do they have Radio New York?
Yeah.
Everything.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Did you know that the Joy Radiothon is still going on?
Yes.
Yeah.
I heard about this, yeah.
Yeah, it's totes amazeballs. The Radiothon is going on until 5 p.m. on June the 30th, so we still want to fleece you for your money. So don't forget to encourage your friends, everyone else, to sign up, become a member of Joy, or even just give us your hard-earned. There's still $36,000 worth of prizes to be won. That's so Joy.
If you sign up today, you can still win those prizes.
Yeah, we'll give you a free hashtag.
Yes. We'll make a hashtag just for you.
And any donations are tax deductible if they're over $2.
Absolutely. Now, we are just about to welcome in Hand Claps and Harmonics, Jade and Pietro, doing a fantastic show. Then we've got Little Fish with Hannah, Australian independent music, and then Chappelle.
Great music lineup for the rest of the afternoon.
I know. We've got a lot going on Joy 94.9 today, so keep listening in.
Good reason to do that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed being on the show today. I think it's quite nice to talk a bit more about escaping, getting away.
And I love the music.
Last message, Jerry has just let us know he was traveling around a lot in his 20s, which is 5 minutes ago. Thank you, you young gun, Jerry. And the big change when you travelled to Barcelona 3 years ago is how the internet means that home can come with you. Yes. It helps with the isolation. Jerry, that's a really great point. Thank you for bringing that
up. Very, very true.
Escape pod.
That's so Joy!
Radiothon 2014 is on.
Get social and share your Radiothon photos, experiences and stories with the hashtag That's So Joy.
That's so Joy.
Let me take a selfie.
That's so Joy.
That's so Joy.
That's so Joy.
That's so Joy.
Tweet it, like it, grab it, snap it.
Hashtag That's So Joy.
Okay, let's go take some shots.
Radiothon 2014?
That's so Joy!
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with Joy.